This week on the Golf Digest podcast, we spoke with Gary McCord, the entertaining CBS golf commentator, to preview the 99th PGA Championship at Quail Hollow in Charlotte, North Carolina. This wide-ranging interview not only touches on Jordan Spieth's pursuit of the Grand Slam, but how McCord got started as a broadcaster back in the 80s, and the origins of his signature Fu Manchu mustache. Thanks for listening. Welcome back to the Golf Digest podcast. This is Steve Hennessy here, Quail Hollow. We're joined by Gary McCord before CBS's telecast of the 99th PGA Championship here this week at Quail Hollow. You can catch coverage on TNT Thursday and Friday and on CBS from 2 to 7 on Saturday and Sunday. Gary, great to be joined with you here.
Thank you. Be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. I mean, a lot of storylines this week. Chief among them, Jordan Spieth, going for the career Grand Slam at age 23. When you just think about what he has the potential to do at such a young age, I mean, you know, how do you put that into words? I mean,
if you put it in words, it could be one of the greatest accomplishments in golf ever at that age, and he's got to do it this time or the next time. Tiger's going to win that battle. So it's going to be interesting to see how he applies himself. He's a he's a golf nerd. He figures it out. He's not, when you go pick guys to win, it's, you never get Jordan up there and then he's always up there. He's got the brain to play golf.
He finds a way somehow. I mean, DJ and Rory amaze everyone with their length, but the way that he can pick apart a golf course is really what separates him, right? I mean, when you look back at his game, is that what stands out most?
Then basically, the first thing is, most of the time, he's on with the putter, and he's on from deadly range, which deadly range is outside of 20 feet. That deflates guys. That goes, they always go, here he goes again. Oh, God, not again. Yeah. Is he going to start making bombs from everywhere?
Like Bert.
You know, he doesn't hit it the straightest off the tee. He's not the best iron player. He doesn't hit it the farthest. But you know what? When you're done, he's the guy that figures out how to win. And that's kind of Nicklaus-like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and with the putter too, Nicklaus-like. Just looking back at Birkdale, he goes on that run. Can you recall a stretch like that where someone in the final round of a major over the last five holes just went on and just turned it on like that after a disappointing drive at 13? I mean, how impressive was that?
I don't know if I've seen anybody turn it from off to on. Right. I mean, that's literally like driving down the track and you have both tires, rear tires blow out. Mm-hmm. And then somehow you got around the corner, all of a sudden you got both tires back on and now you're going faster than you've ever gone. Well, wait a minute. How'd you do that?
Right.
How'd you change those tires so fast to reverse that negative flow he was going? That's just being a golfer. You know, it's being one of the great golf heads there is. And he figured it out and persevered and got in there and dug in and turned that thing around faster than I've ever seen anybody turn anything around. Hmm.
Did that remind you of anyone in, you know, past major performances the way he was able to find that gear?
I don't remember anybody that was going desperate at that point. And, you know, it looked like Matt was going to, you know, finally get it and get there because he was much more consistent. He was finding his ball, getting in the fairway. Yeah. And Jordan's all over the place. And then, you know, when he hit one into the next hemisphere over there on 13,
right.
It was, you know, that was fool's folly over there. What's he going to make here? 7, 8, whatever?
Yeah.
You know, figures out how to make a bogey, and then doink, 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 coming in.
Right.
What? You know, it's like Matt said, where did that come from?
Yeah.
How do you Gucci, get right? there from where he was?
Right.
So, good for him.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think we in the media have a tendency to leap onto a storyline. You know, whoever the hottest player is at the time earlier this year, you know, who could have thought Dustin Johnson wouldn't have a major by now? It was all about DJ. It's been all about Jason Day in the past. You think that's a little unfair to all these other great players who, you know, are in the top 10, Hideki Matsuyama? I mean, he just won last week. Are we kind of overlooking him? You know, is that a fair kind of assessment.
Yeah, I'm not saying, I mean, do you kind of overlook being, you know, what let's say the third ranked player in the world right now?
Right. Just and, won by five shots.
Yeah, and blew him out. I mean, just took him and just wrung him out coming down the end. Yeah, we kind of overlook him. I think the guys, once he wins a major, and he will, once he wins a major, you won't overlook him. But right now, he is the guy that's kind of like, okay, well, he's got a chance. And you get to the bottom and you go, oh, you know, Matsuyama, I was playing good. He's really playing good. Okay. But you don't really pick him to do that. And he's got everything other than, you know, the putters lack this year. And goodness knows if he would have got off his 180th in putting. That's 180. That's towards the end of the spectrum. And he is beating everybody all the time. So, there is, like you said, there's a lot of storylines in this PGA. I wouldn't know who to pick other than somebody that hits a long way.
Right.
This golf course is wet, and it's long, and it's just brutal. Mm-hmm. So, the forecast is still for some wet weather. So, you know, if you don't fly at 320 out there, it's going to be a long week for you.
Sure. How do you assess Quail Hollow? First major here, there's been some changes. Fazio came in and did the first and second hole, became a long opener now, and the fourth hole as well. Just what are your impressions and what do you think we'll see?
I was out there walking yesterday, first four or five holes with Charlie Hoffman and a couple of guys, and watching them play it and looking at the changes. The huge change is going to be the grass. They've got this champions grass Bermuda B12, sounds like a shot, B something, I don't know what it is. Anyway, it's Bermuda. It's going to be good, much better than it was before with the bent grass. It gets a little shaky this time of the year actually. And you take that and there are only 60 bunkers out here now. They cleared a lot of trees. No one's going to know any of that stuff. Nobody that watches before, they're going to go, oh, I remember that hole. I can barely remember. I played here since 1974 on this golf course.
Mm-hmm. It's the same
when
hole.
It was not much.
It hasn't changed much.
Yeah, now it's really good. Right. It was really good before you did it. And then you start off with a hole that's 530 on the first hole, par four, and you got 8 feet to hit it in off the tee.
No,
it's like, whoa, wait a minute. So, again, it's I just hope we're not building golf courses and redesigning golf courses that there's only 30 guys can win. Because when I stepped out on that tee and the fairway, and it went squish, squish. Mm-hmm. And I looked at that first hole, dog leg to the right, 524, par four, and thought, I couldn't get within 80 yards of that hole in two with a driver three would. So, and these guys, they're going to have to pound it to get it there. So you go from a field that's 156. First hole, I turned to my buddy and I said, now there's 30 guys can win that, and that's it. That's it. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yep.
And you better take a guy that kills it.
Right.
Because I don't know how you'd play it just thumping it around. Mm-hmm. You're really dumb.
So this could be really a week where distance separates.
All those, and if you look at the top guys on the tour, what do they do?
Right.
We're in that era now. Mm-hmm. You better bomb it, or you just go home.
Yeah. Kept good at the U.S. Open.
Go home.
Right.
Yep.
Another storyline. Yesterday was announced that the PGA is moving to May from the August date. Just what are your thoughts on that? How that kind of frees up the schedule maybe and, gives us a major each month?
I think, Jay Monahan, our new commissioner, I think he did hell of a job in doing one thing. I always wondered, why do we end our tour when football season starts? Why? Even the worst teams, the people that live in those cities are still optimistic. They're still getting two or three weeks, and boy, they still are really bad. But they're going to watch. And so golf just gets blown out. You got the FedEx Cup, FedEx paying a lot of money, and we slot them right against the Open of football. That's really not fair. So it was always the thing, let's get out of their way. They're the big gorilla. Get out of their way. Let them go. Let's end before football. Great. So now, once we establish that, this is all going to be in 2019. Now we start going backwards and we start going, okay, where are our holes? Where are holes in the schedule? How can we make this more repetitive where the people get involved and so forth and watching golf?
And, right. And there's a reason.
And if, yeah, and if we shift, if the tour shifted their championship back to March, which it was before Augusta, oh, that would be good. If we didn't, now we got a big hole in May. Man, if we could talk the PGA into moving back to May, which they did a billion years ago, right. Now all of a sudden there is a flow. Every month there's a major, there's world golf tournaments, and then there's the FedEx Cup, and then either President's Cup or the Ryder Cup. So there actually is some sanity to the chaos that was unorganized, obviously chaos,
right.
that was kind of freewheeling. Mm-hmm. So this is, and they accepted to do it. I wouldn't want to be the last major towards the end of the year because it's, again, you get caught up in football, you get caught up in FedEx, you get caught up in Ryder Cup.
Right.
So I'll go back. Yeah, I'll go back and get in the early part of it when it's still, all the enthusiasm is festering and anything. So all in all, you go over all those reasons. I think it's a great move. I think Monahan has done a heck of a job in organizing that and then talking to everybody else and following up. So fantastic. Mm-hmm. And good for the PGA to say, okay, we'll do that.
Sure. I think it allows some other opportunities too, you know, maybe do some global things where, you know, everyone has talked about making some global tour where, you know, U.S. players might go over to Europe at some point and play. You know, it's kind of... It's out there. I don't think it's concrete, but, you know, it allows you to do some things. You know, can you see in 10 years down the road that there's some semblance of, like, a global tour in the true sense from where we
Well,
are?
I mean, basically, we have a global tour
right.
out here. That's
right.
where the World Golf Championships are supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Having three now, or we can, you know, maybe expand that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the idea is to put on golf tournaments to get the players money. That's the bottom line. And so you try to take every week and occupy it with something. And hopefully it's under one umbrella, our umbrella, the PGA Tour. So that was always Dean Beeman's mandate, you know, cover every week. If you don't, somebody else will come in and take it, and they're going to be able to give money to other players, so we want to take care of our guys. So we're at that point, but when we first formulated this back in the early 80s, it, you know, there wasn't the social media, all of the importance of all of this stuff, and now it's really focused, and it really has to be organized, this whole thing, because European tour, Asian tour, all these other tours are trying to get in and get the same deal. So it's a very interesting, complex, organized schedule that they're trying to make as sane as possible, palatable as possible to all the different organizations,
right.
So they can all get their piece of the pie.
Yeah. I don't think fans realize all the complexities that go into, you know, all these planning.
No, when you start doing date changes and you take one tournament and say you're going to move over here, well, all of a sudden, you know, there could be other sporting events and towns that they're going to go against that they wouldn't. It gets to be it. I would hate to organize and be the scheduler of the PGA Tour.
That's a full-time job.
Because you're gonna get one guy's gonna be happy and then 10 guys are gonna be mad. So
right.
You know, whoever's doing that, good luck to you.
Sure. Well, you know, for you in terms of scheduling, you're going week to week to all these different cities and you've been doing this now for
103 years. 103 Some, years.
Somewhere around there.
I was first commuted by stagecoach.
Frank Trichinian
flying in airplanes. Yes.
Rode on a stagecoach to come recruit you. But just in terms of the amount of travel you do, you know, city to city, I mean, the CBS compound we're in now, it's such a, you know, big thing to put on each week. What's it like to go from city to city each week? And, you know, are you still enjoying it as much as you were, you know, 20 years ago? What's that all like, you know, traveling with the tour?
Yeah, it's I mean, you can't get anything any easier than being a golf announcer.
Sure.
You really can't. And I started playing the tour in 1974. Mm-hmm. and then started, you know, doing a bunch of other stuff. And then at one point when I turned 50, I was playing on the Champions Tour. I was full-time at CBS. I had 100 other things going I was trying to do. And it was. I remember at one point, I got really tired. I lost to Hale Irwin in Hawaii in a playoff. And we had to fly out of Honolulu the next day. So I went to the airport, stayed at a hotel. I couldn't get out of bed at the hotel.
Wow.
And I'm never
too tired.
Too tired.
Yeah.
And I will look at my wife. I said, I can't make it. I don't know. What's wrong? She goes, have you looked at your schedule? And I go, what? No, what? Why? She goes, when was the last time you were home? I said, I don't know. A couple of weeks ago. When? She goes, it was 17 weeks ago.
Wow.
I said, what?
Jeez.
17. And so I, bull. So I get out. I haven't been home in 17 weeks.
Jeez.
So I'd go from CBS to the Champions Tour.
Right.
To CBS, to outings, to CBS, to outings, the Champions Tour.
No,
you get going and just, now, this is my own volition. I, you know, that's what I wanted to do, but I didn't realize I was stupid on the whole thing.
Right.
So it was, and that's okay. I used to do that when I was 25 playing, but not when you're 50. That doesn't work. That day I said, okay, I'm not going to do that anymore.
Yeah.
And it wasn't doing me any good. Mm. So I calmed that down a little bit, and no, this is fine. I'm having a good time still, above ground, and still have some energy, so it's fun.
Absolutely, I think everyone appreciates the humor you bring to the telecast and your quick wit. I'm always wondering, you know, how you come up with something to say so quickly. You know, is there ever a time where you see something happen where you're like, you actually struggle to kind of put it into words and come up with a comment on it, or, you know,
no,
is that never
usually
a problem, really?
No, it's no. I've been doing this 31 years, so
yeah.
It's like anything else. Or CBS is, or a team. Team has a flow; it has a rhythm to it. Mm-hmm. So you just try to make sure the guys are all in a flow and all their energy's up, and you know, you discuss things. Between guys, if you see it getting a little dull, start, you know, hey, what do you think if this guy did that? And then whoever says something, you disagree with him real fast. I don't care if I agree or don't agree. I want to disagree with him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's a sitcom, you know. All the great sitcoms had four or five people that were all divergent, and they all got together with different opinions and hashed it out, and then people at home take sides.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the worst thing in the world is have somebody on the couch sitting there and falling asleep and not taking a side. But if you come up with something really stupid and try to push that, somebody at home is going to go, I agree with him or her or whatever.
Okay.
Just so you keep the thing going. Golf's a very boring sport, but it plays fast on TV because all other sports, you're only really occupied with one ball.
Right.
And golf, there could be 15 balls in the air at the same time and all have a part of our drama.
Sure.
As we're trying to go from a beginning to a middle, establish the characters, and at the end someone wins.
Right.
You do that on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So there you try to supply the drama to it, and it's entertainment, it's television, so have some fun with it.
Yeah, you're talking entertainment. A fun fact about you people might not realize is you went to the same high school as Steve Martin.
Mm-hmm.
And what was he like? And, you know, getting to know him a little bit.
I mean, he was flat nuts. And this was Garden Grove High School. Garden Grove High School Argonauts. 63.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the head cheerleader and head of the drama class. Yeah. And some of the cheers he came up with are X-rated now. 2007. This is 1963. Okay. He was so far ahead of his time. He was also a magician, and he worked at Disneyland. And he was a guy that would set. There was a little magician store on the bridge that goes over to Fantasyland. And he on the weekend he would put his little tray right there in the middle, and do all these stupid tricks with the balloons on his head and the arrow through his head there. And I remember seeing him. I was in the gym. I was playing basketball, they were practicing cheerleading in there. I knew who he was, but I didn't know him.
Sure.
And I remember I'm watching Johnny Carson one day, you know, right. 10 years later, 20, I don't know when it was. And there's a stupid guy with an arrow through his head and these balloons. And I looked and I looked and I didn't really know his name. I just kind of knew he was an idiot.
The cheerleading guy.
Right. So I go run over and I grab my yearbook, red yearbook, Garden Grove High School Argonauts, 62, whatever it was. Right. And I'm thumbing through there, and there he is, head of the drama class, Steve Martin. That's Steve Martin. Steve Martin. That was the idiot that I went to school with.
Right.
And he was always playing, another little side note, he was always playing, he was sitting in the quad, okay? Remember he played the banjo, right?
Yeah.
And he used to go to Knott's Berry Farm and play the banjo and stuff. But he was being taught by, I think his name was Charlie McEwen, who was the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. They also went to school there. So all I do is see these guys sitting there and they're flicking on their banjos, and McEwen was trying to teach Steve how to play the, he taught him how to play the banjo.
Sure.
I didn't know the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band was there too. What a high school this was in Southern Cal. We were rocking.
Awesome high
school. Yeah, we were rocking. So that was kind of fun.
Yeah. I mean, he's an influence, I'm sure, in terms of comedy as, you know, the years went on. I'm sure you kind of kept a watchful eye on him.
Well, one of the things I did is he was a close-up magician, so I took that and started to do that because I knew I needed an angle, I needed something to get in all these pro-ams and stuff. My golf game wasn't going to do it, so I got in and spent basically 2 years learning how to become a close-up magician because I'd watched Steve. All of it was Steve watching him do it. And he was funnier than hell doing it. He was a big influence and has no clue who I am. I mean, never. Doesn't even exist in the same parallel universe.
Never went. I would disagree with that. He never went up to him and said, "Hey, you know, I'm Gary. We went to the same high school."
Never met him. Went to a couple of his concerts. My sister, who was running couple of things, the Bellagio. She was doing a bunch of stuff there with the art and all that stuff. And she was with him in a elevator. And she goes, "I got to introduce myself. My name is blah, blah, blah. And my brother went to high school with you, Garden Grove High School." And he goes, "Oh, really? Who?" And he goes, he's golf. He does television.
Right.
And she said, he looked and he goes, "I've watched him. Tell him he's funny."
That's awesome.
And that could be my biggest compliment of all time if my sister wasn't lying to me.
Right.
Now, he might have said, "Well, I have no idea who that guy was.
Right.
No, or is, or I hate golf, whatever." But that's what she said, and I don't trust my sister at all. So she could have lied, but that's what she said he said.
Right.
And I've always taken that and go, "Wow, Steve Martin's actually watched me and thinks I'm funny?
Right.
Really?
Right.
Wow, that's cool."
That's pretty cool.
So,
well, golf fans.
Good for my sister. Take care of the bro. You
may or may not have said that.
Yeah, may or may not have.
I love it. Well, golf fans certainly appreciate all the humor, and we would agree with him. One of your trademark things is the mustache, which I'm looking at. It's really impressive. You know, it's always been your thing. Kind of, when did that start? You know, why did it start? And how much effort does that take to maintain?
It started 100 years ago when I was the first guy, 1976, I believe. I came with a full beard into Tucson, which I think was our first term, 76. And they threatened to fine and suspend me if I stepped onto the tee. And so that got down. I whittled it down to a Fu Manchu mustache, and then they said, "We're not gonna let you tee off with that." I said, "Really?" So then I got the ACLU involved, and said, "Here, take a look at our dress code." And they looked, and they started laughing. They go, "Just let us know. We'll you'll if you tee off and they pull you off that, you're gonna whatever is first place, you're gonna win."
Right.
And I didn't take it to that. I just chopped up a little bit. And then I was a little bit of an iconoclast out there. And then when I started television, I saw that, okay, all you got is a little picture up there of you and it is literally a femtosecond that thing is up there, subliminal.
Right,
okay.
Right.
And I went, okay, we gotta stop that. So I was good friends with Raleigh Fingers.
Wow.
So I had a mustache, and Raleigh's got this thing that's climbing
sure.
all over the place.
Right.
And we're playing golf one day, and I knock on his door. We're gonna go play in Palm Springs.
Mm-hmm.
So I knock on his door, and he comes to the door, and mustache was down. Okay,
wow.
I freaked out. Whoa, dude,
<All right>.
What? That's not you. What? He goes, oh no, you got to put wax on it. That's how you do that. He says, here, let me show you. So he showed it 2 seconds. It
sure.
takes 2 seconds,
yeah.
And it stays up forever. And it's so now when it's subliminal, when it goes across
right.
the thing,
everyone knows
who's the idiot with the what's that?
Right.
So what's that? Now it's all it was just a gannet, like magic. Like you find angles. People know you from that and do that. I've been doing that for a long time because basically my ability to play golf wasn't that good. So I had to have different things to set you apart,
yeah,
I guess.
Great. I love it. Going back to when you started, Frank Turkenyon, the famous golf producer for CBS, you know, he recruited you
mm-hmm.
to join at age 28. What was that like to kind of learn from him, because he was such a pioneer in the industry?
Yeah, he was. Frank was the guy that did everything. I learned everything from Frank,
mm-hmm.
everything. And I mean, one of my biggest lessons, I was saying this the other day to somebody, I go to his office, I'm sitting there writing all sorts of things down. I mean, he's back there grumbling at somebody, and I'm writing, he goes, what are you doing? I'm writing notes. About what? About golf. He says, let me see him. So he gets it and he reads it. And you just start tearing it up. Threw it in the trash can. And I'm sitting there going, oh. And he goes, and he points to the TV right there in front of him. He says, see that TV? If I ever catch you telling me what I see on that television, you're fired. I get out of here. I walked outside and said, what the hell does that mean? If I ever catch you, and I went over it and over it and over it, and I went, wow, he doesn't want me to do golf. He wants
right.
me to just take off and go wherever I want
sure.
to go.
Right.
So I asked him later, once I got it, once I understood it, that, okay, if, you know, there's a picture of a guy hitting a shot and the hole is 165 yards, I better not say that.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get fired.
Right.
And
that is your moment.
So I remember later, when Jim Nance was just started. He started like a week after I did, 2 weeks.
Right.
I'm taking Jim to the 15th hole at Doral in a golf cart.
Right.
Frank stops us. Hey, gets out in front. And he says, he looks at Jim and he's going, now listen, I don't want you to do it. Listen, you don't do that. You did. Don't do that. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And he started just pulverizing Jim with
right.
what not to do.
Mm-hmm.
Gets done. And Jim goes, Gary, I better get a separate cart and go to 15 because we're late now.
Right.
So he gets in and Frank starts to walk. I said, Frank, hold it. I said, you've never had that talk with me.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked at me and he says, I'll tell you when you screw up. And he took off. And that was, again, go ahead. And I asked him later, I said, what all that mean? He says, I get bored watching this thing. And he says, if you say something stupid, I actually pay attention. And he says, so basically what he did, he let me go as far as I could go, push the envelope, and then he'd reel me back. So every week I just kept pushing him farther and farther out to see what I could get away with.
Right.
So which was fun for me, and it was actually fun for him, because he told me and made him listen to the telecast,
sure.
which he never did.
Kind of
never did, because he was producing and directing at the same time.
Right.
He didn't have time to do anything.
Right.
So it was an interesting, and that was his greatness. He thought I was just nuts enough that I might be able to turn a tail or do, you know, that I played a long time and didn't play very well, self-deprecating, you know, the whole thing. I when I first started this, Bob Uecker, I've known Bob Uecker forever, and I watched him all the time, and I looked it up. You know, he played for 5 years is all, 200 batting average. He was bad,
right.
but he was so funny on the TV, on Carson and stuff, you know,
right.
self-deprecation, and I went, wow, one day I went, when I started, I went, how many people play baseball professionally? 10,000? You know, when you finally get down to AAA and all that. And I said, I got 25 million golfers that play bad. Why don't I tell them how bad I am? Because I know they're bad. And then I'll tell you what, I'm going to tell you how good these guys are. Well, I had some fun with it.
Right.
And that was it. That was the whole scheme of thing. And then Frank kind of framed it by going, you know, tell them how bad they are and stuff, but, you know, don't tell me what's on TV. Mm-hmm. Tell me what you're thinking, and, right, you know, as bizarre as you are, tell me what, you know, so you just got more bizarre. That was it.
Right. Was there a time, like, what did you say that kind of led him to, were there any moments where he, you know, had to step in and say, hey, you're pushing it a little too far? Were there those moments?
Oh, there was, yeah, a few. I remember when I first started, first telecast, mm-hmm, I was working with Vern, first one.
Nice.
And I didn't even know I was going to work telecast. I was going to go in the trucks. I was on the board at that time making decisions. I just wanted to watch a telecast. And they sent me out to 16. And on Sunday, the late Payne Stewart did it on the back of the green, 16 up on a hill, long grass, going straight down literally to a green that was like as fast as plywood. And again, not working, I was playing still, and had no pretense to work. And Vern looked at me and goes, well, Gary, what's he got? And I said, well, all you people at home, here's what I want you to go get a ball, get a wedge, go out to your front lawn, chip it on your driveway, start hauling for it to bite. That's just what he's got. And Vern looked at me like, that was good.
Yeah.
I got done, and Frank goes, never forget it. First week, what are you doing next week? And I was going to play the Kemper, which was in Washington at that time. And I go, well, I'm going to go play Kemper next week. He goes, all right, good. When you missed a cut, come on up on the weekend. So for 3 years, I'd miss the cut quite regularly, and I would go up and do the broadcast. And they, you know, that was 1986. Mm-hmm. I think I finally got a contract in 89.
Gosh. Wow. So you're just...
I freelanced, yeah.
Right.
I played bad golf and then went up and did the telecast.
Man,
and got fun. Some eight. I couldn't eat when I was playing golf, but they had room service, so I could eat nicely.
Right, so that was good.
That was good.
Man,
that was good.
I love it. We could chat forever about these stories. Yeah, just maybe a last question would be, at the end of the week for Spieth, you know, he has all this pressure riding on him, which doesn't seem like it gets to him, really.
Doesn't bother him. It didn't look like.
For such a young guy, I mean, how could you, you know, how do you put that in context that you're 23? We don't see players like this that often that kind of,
you know, what
have their goal in mind.
When I take a look and go, why is he doing this? Why is he succeeding? And the other day I'm looking, you know what? He has a core of a bunch of buddies that are golfers out here. And they know what he's going through. They treat him with disrespect. They goon him all the time, clown him, everything else, about what he's doing. Now go look at the guys in the past that have done that. They're isolated. Jack was isolated.
Sure.
Tiger was really isolated. So that pressure can, I think this team of clowns that he's got, you know, all of his boys that they go and they go vacation.
Right.
I'm telling you, I think that is proven an insulation to the time and the place and all of the stuff that he is trying to accomplish. I think it's really helping him. I really do, because you get done, you know, and there's Justin Thomas is sitting there. We've got Ricky sitting there. You got all of his buddies.
Yeah.
Smiley Kaufman's there.
Hey,
what's going on? They're gooning him all the time with, you know, back social media and stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's got to help. Mm-hmm. That has to help. The other guys didn't have that.
Right.
Didn't have it.
Yeah.
And drove him, you know, yes, Tiger probably drove him nuts.
Sure.
Jack was isolated. But you look at all the guys, Norman isolated. This is interesting. This is a whole new paradigm shift. It's kind of like team golf and or, you know, run team, you know, when they have runners and they put the one guy out to push him and then the other guy comes, you know, what that kind of deal in pelotons and bicycling. Maybe we're doing that in golf now.
Yeah.
I don't know.
it's cool how this generation's grown up, and you know,
the social media. So they form packs, and you know, they ride pack around, right. You know, like the old days. So maybe that's it.
Yeah, and there's a lot of time for them to, you know, enjoy success out here.
Yes,
it's just getting started.
Yeah.
So yeah. Well, we'll see how Speed does this week, and all of his other buddies, Justin Thomas and Rory, DJ. I mean, there's a lot of storylines. So thanks, everyone, for joining us on the Golf Digest podcast, and thanks to Gary McCord for telling some stories.
Thanks to Gary McCord from CBS for taking some time here at Quail Hollow to chat about the PGA Championship, and thanks to all of you for listening. If you haven't done so already, make sure you've subscribed to the Golf Digest podcast on iTunes, and check back next week for our next guest. Enjoy the PGA.